Hello and welcome to the Guardian Film Show. I'm Zan Brooks. The sun's gone in, the clouds have come out, and we've been plunged into a murky world of top imposters and secret agents, great pretenders and hidden snitches. Don't touch the mask! You never know what horrors lurk beneath. Coming up this week, we're getting down with Shadow Dancer, James Marsh's film about an IRA member played by Andrea Risborough, recruited to inform for Clive Owen's MI5 agent. And we're ticking off The Watch, which sees Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn, Jonah Hill and Richard Ayoade shooting the breeze and blasting the aliens. But first off, The Imposter, about the strange case of Frederic Bourdin, a 23-year-old Frenchman who posed as a 16-year-old blonde American and got away with it, for a bit at least. Henry Barnes tracked down the film's director, Bart Layton, and Charlie Parker, the private investigator who smelt something fishy.
I look at it. Black and white picture, old picture. Well, be missing for 3 or 4 years, guarantee one thing. There will be a change. If there is a change, there will be doubt. If there is doubt, then I got a chance.
Dealing with Frederick is not straightforward. He is charismatic and he can be charming and likable. To understand how this all came about, you as an audience member need to have a fairly direct experience of him. And so it felt important to me to be able to put the audience to some extent on the receiving end of the con man in a way.
When a child is missing for years, either the child is dead or the child is not found.
There was just something wrong about it.
Something was being hidden and I didn't know what that was.
I was hired by a television show called Hard Copy to investigate a boy that had just been released or gotten out of in captivity of a place that held him and tortured him and that kind of thing. And so they wanted me to check the story out. And I was working as a private investigator in San Antonio. And I went to located the family and went to the house and took a producer, camera people, we all went there. And I was fortunate enough to be seated in a place where the picture of the real missing boy was right in front of me. And the family was off to my left, and he was in front. And I kept looking at the picture and looking at him and comparing it, and they just didn't seem to go.
I took the phone and I told her that.
This is Nicholas. We got him. It's him. It's incredible. It's him.
In a different life, had he chosen to devote some of those skills and, you know, some of that intelligence to a different career, he probably would have been extraordinary. You know, Adam O'Brien, who's a very skilled actor who plays Frederick in the film, in the drama elements, watched all of the interview rushes and was, you know, thought this guy could have just been an amazing actor had he been given the opportunity or had he chosen to do it. And I guess he is an amazing actor, it's just he appears in his own fiction rather than anyone else's.
A story so bizarre, it's hard to believe it's true.
I mean, seriously.
Trust you in my home, you rascal, you.
And you can see a longer version of that interview on the Guardian film site. Joining me to review this week's releases is the Guardian film critic Peter Bradshaw. Peter, pretty iffy job there by Henry, but what did you make of the film?
Yeah, that guy's an amateur. Don't know who
he's
he is.
He's too young.
I really liked the film. I thought it was really classy, and Bart Layton, the director, has made this documentary. It's very slick and mysterious and foggy, and you think this is, you know, it's a really impressive way to tell a story. I did kind of wonder whether it's more of a great story rather than a great documentary and what the difference is between the two. So I'd wonder if he's kind of picked up maybe a little bit too much credit for retelling a story that is in itself fascinating and telling it in an efficient way. And particularly if you look at his past work, he did a lot of work for the Channel 5 series Banged Up Abroad, which is...
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's
yeah.
about, like, Brits who, you know, inadvertently or otherwise smuggle drugs to other countries and then get caught out there and experience all sort of horrible horrible events with foreigners, and you know, and it's shot very slickly, and it's very foggy, and it's very well done, and there's a very similar style to this film. And I just wondered if maybe that was some sort of indication that we're throwing a lot of plaudits at this guy, but maybe doesn't quite deserve him as much as we.
It's kind of surprising because the film actually, you know, this man's a psychopath, really, isn't it? You know, and it's part of his own sort of talent that he, you know, he's very charming and sort of takes you in. Is the film complicit in that? Do we feel too much for this guy? Is it too much about the perpetrator rather than the victims?
I think in a way it is, partly because of the way it's shot. There's been a few people saying that Bart Layton lets Frederick talk directly to the camera and eyes straight down the lens, whereas the family are doing the kind of more traditional to the side. So you get this feeling that he's really selling you his personality and he's selling you the story, Frederick. And so we are with him, and he's actually quite a likeable guy. You know, he has in some ways a strange genius to him in that he can fool this many people, including us, the viewer, through the film. And make it entertaining and make himself seem charming, even though he's done some fairly horrible things.
Nobody ever gave a damn about me. And to know that if I change my identity, the reward was eventually to be put in a place where actually they really cared about me. And hell yeah, I mean, I was reborn. I was born again.
More suspicious minds and double crossings in Shadow Dancer. Set in 1993 when peace talks were underway, it's based on Tom Bradbury's novel about a family of IRA supporters and the government agent who recruits one of them as an informant. Andrew Pulver caught up with the film's stars and director after its premiere in Berlin.
So this is our number. Memorize it, then burn the paper. Always ask for Declan. He's your new boyfriend, that's your cover story.
The idea of being forced to snoop and spy on your own flesh and blood in your own house and what that would be like felt like a very interesting, dramatic kind of world to be in. I lived through the history of that conflict from the 80s and 90s, and so certainly that was something I was familiar with as just in the news, as we all were. And it's a very extraordinary and complicated and, dare I say it, dramatically interesting for a dramatist to now look at some of those stories.
You press that button and half the world will come running.
What's your name?
Always ask for Declan.
You mean your real name?
It's better you don't know.
If you make a mistake, I'm dead. Right. I'd like to know your name.
I think the strength of this piece for me was that it wasn't judgmental. It wasn't a film that was taking any sides. It was much more about, you know, a very difficult time and characters being put in very difficult situations. And when you see her go back to her family and look at, you know, every character in it, is you can kind of understand the situation they're in, and it's not apportioning blame, it's not being judgmental, it's more you just come out going, that was a really difficult time for a lot of people.
She's not had time to form as a person. I'm not sure she understands her own wants or desires or knows really who she is at all. But what she does have is a very full inner life and a ferocity, a strength, and a huge amount of heart. And she spends this situation where we come to her for 2 hours in and out in patches of her life in under extreme, the type of extreme pressure that only can be coped with through practice.
We need to talk now.
You lose your own, then you're back like nothing ever happened. Don't leave Belfast.
We're not done yet.
Gavin knows.
It's his job to make you think he knows.
I can't hold on any longer. I need the word now.
I know the filmmakers have been really keen to make an apolitical thriller. Is that really possible, given it's such contentious subject matter?
I think he has done to his best of his ability try to strip the politics away from it and not try to judge anyone too much. But it does feel like there's a little bit of a hole in it because you're expecting him to make some sort of statement, even at the end. The fact that we're so closely tied in with this family would suggest to me that it has kind of swung one way, maybe awkwardly, but you're with Colette throughout her troubles and her own personal troubles, and you're with the family, and you see a lot with her older brothers and their two kind of high up guys in the IRA in the local community. So they are humanised, and you can't get away from that.
And you very much see that her motivation is revenge for the death of her younger brother when she was about 8 or something.
Although it's implied by the MFO that he was killed by an IRA weapon. So there is that kind of
bit of
two-sided, bit of fog to it.
But I think just the way it's shot is you are sort of invited to sympathise heavily with these people. It doesn't exist in a vacuum, does it?
I mean, Marsh's background is in documentaries like Project Nim, and he did Man on Wire, which won the Oscar in 2008. So if you're being generous, you can say he's just shooting what you would have seen at the time, which was incredibly deprived estates and kind of grey skies and not much money about. And it looks beautiful, this film, I thought. It looks, it really takes you into that world and steeps you in this atmosphere that they're living in.
It is incredibly well shot. And, I think we should also say, I really liked it. I thought it was really good.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
It was a great film.
One bit that I really liked was the kind of government office scenes where Clive Owen is wandering around in a fog of cigarette smoke, like something out of Red Riding, and they're kind of shouting at each other, and there's that bureaucracy of office life, but it's done so much better and so much more realistically than something, say, like The Bourne Legacy, where they're kind of frantically swooping around and picking up phones and telling people to track secret agents. It's this very kind of almost beige look at clandestine work that really worked for me.
Yeah, and you've got the sort of 1993 Amstrads that they're kind of looking out files on, and it's done perfectly, and it does have that documentary thing. It's done without the kind of overt stylishness of something like Tinker Tailor, the remake, from last year. It's really gripping.
I got to take you out. It's just me, you understand? They've got their own agenda, so if I take you out, we're on our own. I'll need a few days. I can take you, boy, but nothing else, you understand?
Well, the clock is ticking and the alarm bells are a-ringing. It's time for the watch.
I want to thank you all for coming, and I thought we'd start out by just getting to know each other.
Right, well, I'll start this off. My name is Bob, with a B.
Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn, Richard Ayoade, and Jonah Hill unite in small-town America to form a neighbourhood watch after one man is gruesomely killed in a supermarket. Can they get it together to hunt down the killer? And what if the killer actually turns out to be an alien, one of many, who've just landed on Earth and are planning an invasion?
My name's Jamarcus, recently very happily divorced, and just looking to get more involved in the local community.
Well, that was simple. Welcome, Jamarcus.
Also, I have this one scenario in my mind. Young, sexy, Asian housewife, alone at night, frightened. A noise out by the trash cans. Best call the neighbourhood watch. I show up, look heroic, and then, get this. She sucks.
Okay. Hear me now.
I'm also interested in that happening to me.
I was sort of thinking if anyone else had made this film, you'd kind of be tempted to be friendly to it and give it 2 stars or something. Because these guys have made it, about whom you have such high expectations, you think, I've got to give it 1 star. It's so bad.
Yeah. The weight of talent and money and time that would have gone into this.
And Seth Rogen wrote the script. Great people.
Yeah, and Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
Zoolander. Zoolander feels like a completely different memory to this. It's really immature and it's silly. And it basically feels like it was written by a group of 10-year-old kids who, think that bodily functions are funny. And it's just...
And, to be honest, we're the kind of people that would actually laugh up silly, immature stuff quite a lot. We love Ted.
Full of swearing and fart jokes. And I'm not averse to that at all. I think it's probably the group dynamic with this, which is just weird. Like, every joke is followed by this massive vacuum of silence.
Yeah.
And
And
you're just waiting for something.
And they're such an amazing ensemble, and yet they completely don't work together at all. And yeah. So you have, and that's sort of strangely mirrored by the plot, isn't it? You have Vince Vaughn trying to get them all together as a team. And he sounds strained, you know, because the whole thing is strained. And you know, they don't gel. It's like they're all... You know,
I agree. I kind of feel like they all think they're in different films.
Yeah,
like I think Ben Stiller thinks he's in some sort of kind of grown-up Greg Mottola type comedy drama about how he can't have kids, because that's a central plot point. And then, you know, you have Richard Ayoade in there as this kind of lovable, amiable, almost guest part who's just like going to come in and say, you know, American swear words in a funny English accent, and that's enough. And then Vince Vaughn is there trying to really inject some energy into it, and usually he does that and it's grating and silly, but in this case I actually thought, go on Vince, because somebody needs to pull this up and bring it out of the doldrums that it's fallen into, and at least he was giving it a go.
You really felt for him in this. And with Richard Ayoade, at first you think, oh, you know, oh good, you know, and that's sort of unexpected, and it sort of makes you almost laugh, the fact he's sort of in it and there in such a strange presence. And then I just found it upsetting that he was in it and that he was sort of that his kind of shtick was being kind of polluted like this. It was horrible.
I mean, it's like the IT Crowd thing, but transplanted into a mainstream Hollywood blockbuster, and it's supposed to be his big break. And after Submarine, which I loved, and he directed, I thought that was, you know, it was good for a first-time comedy.
Yeah.
And then he goes and does this, and you just, you know, you wonder if he'd want to wipe this off his record, really, just because it's...
They all should. It's just... I mean, so what went wrong? I mean, you know, the script's terrible, but the actors are great, but is it the direction? I mean, this guy's never directed anything before, right?
Yeah, he's a guy who used to be, well, he is, one of the Lonely Island, which are a comedy troupe that do videos for YouTube and were incredibly popular, and he's become a Saturday Night Live director as well.
Yeah, but, I mean, even Stiller's a better director than this. I mean, what the hell was this? It was just unbelievably poor.
What is it? Look at this. Now I stick a finger and another light goes off. It's weird. Hey, why don't we try to stick all our fingers in at the same time, see what happens?
All right, guys. Let's all finger these holes together.
This is a bad idea. Come on. I don't like this.
Come on, Jamarcus.
Okay, fine, but this is a bad idea.
Get your finger in there.
Okay.
Whoa! Well, that's all from us this week. My thanks, as ever, to Peter Bradshaw for joining me. We won't be here for a couple of weeks, but have no fear. We'll be bringing you daily video as Zan Brooks and Peter Bradshaw go to the Venice Film Festival, and then Henry Barnes and Catherine Shaud head to Toronto for theirs. Till then, thanks for watching.